ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्ण। वेलकम टू अवर भागवत प्रवाह सीरीज। वी आर डिस्कसिंग थर्ड कैंट ऑफ श्रीमद् भागवतम। इन द लास्ट 5 डेज वी हैव कंप्लीटेड द फर्स्ट 24 चैप्टर्स ऑफ थर्ड कैंटो, एंड फ्रॉम टुडे वी विल डिस्कस द टीचिंग्स ऑफ लॉर्ड कपिला टू मदर देवहूति। एंड दीज टीचिंग्स बिगिन फ्रॉम द 25th चैप्टर ऑफ थर्ड कैंटो एंड गो अप टू 32nd चैप्टर ऑफ थर्ड कैंटो। एंड द 33rd चैप्टर डिस्क्राइब्स दी prayers of Mother Devahuti to Kapila Deva. So today we will discuss 4 chapters, chapter number 25, 26, 27 and 28. And all the teachings of Lord Kapila in response to Mother Devahuti's questions are summarized in one slide that you can see there in the form of this chart. So Mother Devahuti asked 7 questions to Kapila Deva over these several 8 chapters. And Kapila answered them. The first question asked by Mother Devahuti was, "Please, O Lord, I am tormented by this Maya or illusion. Please dispel my illusion." In response to this question, Kapila describes Adhyatmika Yoga, and that is spiritual path of connecting oneself with the Supreme Lord. And this Adhyatmika Yoga consists of 3 elements. One is Sankhya. Second is yoga and third is bhakti. Sankhya is basically jnana yoga and yoga is basically ashtanga yoga and bhakti is bhakti yoga. So that jnana in short is called sankhya and ashtanga yoga in short is called yoga and bhakti yoga is bhakti. So out of these 3, bhakti is superior. So Kapila establishes that as superior. In the second question, Mother Devahuti asks, "What kind of bhakti should I perform to easily attain you, my dear Lord?" And Kapila's answer to the second question was that bhakti must be performed beyond modes with proper spontaneous emotion towards Krishna. So that is called bhava bhakti. And if one is not capable of performing bhava bhakti, one can perform vaidhi sadhana bhakti. Means the first kind of bhakti is spontaneous devotional service, and the second kind of bhakti is regulated practicing devotional service. And after that, Mother Devahuti asked her next 2 questions, that is question number 3 and 4, in which she requested Kapila to elaborate on these paths of Jnana or Sankhya and also Ashtanga Yoga. Not to practice them, but also to compare and contrast Bhakti Yoga with this Sankhya and Ashtanga. So she wanted to know them, and Kapila elaborates on them. And the 5th question that she asked was, she wanted to know path of bhakti in greater detail, and Kapila describes that. And 6th question of Devahuti was the nature of time. What is the nature of time? Then Kapila describes the characteristics of time. And the last question and the 7th question of Devahuti was requested to elaborate on this whole path of cycle of birth and death, which is called samsara or samsriti. And Kapila elaborates that. So these are the 7 topics that are discussed in the teachings of Lord Kapila to Mother Devahuti. Number 1, Adhyatmika Yoga. Number 2, Bhakti to easily attain the Lord. Number 3, Sankhya or Jnana. Number 4, Yoga or Ashtanga Yoga. Number 5, Bhakti path in great detail. Number 6, the characteristics of time. Number 7, that is Samsruti or Samsara, which is the repeated cycle of birth and death. These are the 7 topics discussed in teachings of Lord Kapila to Mother Devahuti. So we will begin the 25th chapter. In the 25th chapter, Mother Devahuti goes to Kapila Dev after the retirement of Kardama Muni. So Kardama Muni goes to the forest to perform his austerities and his devotional service as a renunciant. And Mother Devahuti stays at home and hears teachings from Lord Kapila. So Mother Devahuti meets Kapila Dev, and then she remembers the words of Lord Brahma also, because at the time of appearance of Kapila, Mother Devahuti hears from Lord Brahma that she will be enlightened by her son Kapila. So now remembering the words of Brahma, Devahuti goes to Kapila and says, "My dear Kapila, my dear Lord, I am sick of the disturbance of this ignorance due to material senses. And you are like my Satchakshu, you are my transcendental eye. You can give me the divine vision by teaching me the right philosophical conclusions. So please, this I have been overwhelmed with ignorance. I have been, please dispel my darkness of ignorance by enlightening me. And please dispel my illusion of aham mameti conception." The specific nature of this illusion or maya of the Lord is the conception of I and mine, aham mameti conception. So because I am influenced by this aham mameti conception, please dispel my illusion, my dear Lord. She placed a request in front of Kapila. So I have taken your shelter, and Kapila responds to this first request or question of Mother Devahuti by describing to her Adhyatmika Yoga, which is a solution to this illusion of Mother Devahuti. Basically, Devahuti is representing a common conditioned soul and asking several philosophical questions to Kapiladev, seeking answers. And those explanations of Kapiladev are very much beneficial for the entire humanity. And Kapila offers Adhyatmika Yoga as a solution. And Adhyatmika Yoga is a combination of three things. Number one, is Jnana or Sankhya. So Jnana and Sankhya. Basically, Jnana means knowledge. Sankhya means analysis. So this Jnana and Sankhya are irreplaceably used. They can replace each other, because basically Kapiladev, he is presenting analytical knowledge of matter and spirit. And that is called Sankhya or Jnana. Sankhya Yoga or Jnana Yoga. So he says that this Adhyatmika Yoga is a combination of this Sankhya or Jnana, and second is Ashtanga Yoga, or in short, Ashtanga Yoga is called Yoga and Bhakti. So three things are there: Sankhya, Yoga and Bhakti. So these are the three elements of Adhyatmika Yoga, which is spiritual way of connecting with the Supreme. So now of these three, Bhakti is the Supreme. So Kapiladev elaborates on this. And to perform this Adhyatmika Yoga, mind is the pivot. One has to control one's mind. The mind which is controlled and focused on spiritual practices is like a friend for the yogi or the practitioner of spiritual path. And the mind which is uncontrolled and the mind is focusing, when the mind is focused on so many sense gratificatory elements, then such kind of uncontrolled mind is not a friend, it's an enemy for the conditioned souls. So mind free from lust and greed transcends this material happiness and distress, transcends all dualities. So now the best way of controlling mind is to engage that mind and the senses in the process of Bhakti Yoga. So now he says that perfection in yoga is not possible without Bhakti. So he says, how to get that Bhakti? So we understood that to perform Adhyatmika Yoga, one has to keep the mind as pivot and mind has to be controlled and focused on the yoga. And of these three elements of this Adhyatmika Yoga, which are Sankhya, Yoga and Bhakti, Bhakti is the supreme, Bhakti is the best path. Because the Sankhya or Jnana and Ashtanga Yoga, both are dependent on Bhakti and they are not complete without Bhakti. So one has to focus on Bhakti. And how to get that Bhakti? And Bhakti is attained in the association of bhaktas or devotees or sadhus. So in the 20th shloka, Kapiladev says, Prasangamajaram pasham atmanaha kavayo viduhu sa eva sadhushukrito mokshadvarama pavritam. Prasangam ajaram pasham atmanaha kavayo viduhu. If one associates with sadhus, exalted devotees of the Supreme Lord, then one opens doors for liberation. But sa eva sadhushukrito mukshadvaram apavritam. If one associates with materialistic people, then one will degrade oneself. But if one associates with devotees of the Lord, the doors for liberation are open. And what are the characteristics of such devotees or sadhus? He explains in the next couple of verses. So sadhus have very wonderful characteristics, primary and secondary. First he describes the secondary characteristics of sadhu in the 21st shloka. Titikshavaha karunikaha suhurdaha sarvadehinam ajatashatravaha shantaha sadhavaha sadhu bhushanaha. Titikshavaha means sadhus are very tolerant. Titikshavaha karunikaha, sadhus are very compassionate. Suhurdaha sarvadehinam, and they are genuine well-wishers of all embodied beings. Sarvadehina means not only human beings, they are genuine well-wishers of non-human species also. They are compassionate on cows and other animals and birds also. Suhurdaha sarvadehinam ajatashatravaha shantaha. Devotees are also called ajatashatrus, means they do not consider anyone as enemies. There could be some envious people who might consider devotees as their enemies, like Duryodhana was considering Yudhishthira as an enemy. But Yudhishthir never considered Duryodhana as an enemy. Ajatashatravaha shantaha, devotees are very peaceful, not agitated. Ajatashatravaha shantaha sadhavaha sadhu bhushanaha. These wonderful qualities of tolerance, compassion, non-envious nature and friendly nature. So these are all the ornaments of a sadhu. And these are the secondary characteristics. What is the primary characteristic of a sadhu? He says, mayyeva mayyananyena bhavena bhaktim kurvanti ye dridham matkrite tyakta karmanaha tyakta svajana bandhavaha. In this 22nd shloka, Kapiladeva describes the primary characteristics of a sadhu. What are the characteristics? Mayi ananyena bhavena bhaktim kurvanti ye dridham. The primary characteristic of a devotee is to perform devotional service unto Krishna without any deviation in the mind. Mayi ananyena bhavena bhaktim kurvanti ye dridham, with great determination, with firm faith and fixed mind, he will just focus on performance of loving devotional service unto Krishna. That is the primary characteristic. And because when a devotee is focused on his devotional service to the Lord, then other qualities like tolerance, compassion, friendly nature, satisfaction, non-envy, all these qualities will manifest. Because yasyasti bhaktir bhagavatya kinchana sarvair gunaistatra samasate suraha harav abhaktasya kuto mahadguna manorathe nasati dhavato bahi. Even Prahlad also says, when one performs devotional service unto Krishna, all the Vaishnava qualities will manifest in such a person's character. So we have to develop Vaishnava character. We have to develop all these qualities of compassion, tolerance, humility, patience and satisfaction and many other such qualities, non-enviousness. Because when we receive initiation from a guru, it is like receiving the seed of bhakti, bhakti lata, from the guru. So for a seed to grow and to become a very wonderful plant, we need three things. First, the seed has to be potent. Means seed, if you plant fried seeds, they will not give rise to plant. So seed has to be potent. Second is we have to water the seed. Water the seed. And third thing is we need a fertile soil. So receiving initiation from a bona fide guru in a Vaishnava sampradaya is like receiving potent seed. And regularly practicing devotional service and doing shravanam kirtanam, means hearing of scriptures and chanting the holy names and discussing wisdom scriptures, all these elements of bhakti, they are called watering process. Especially shravanam kirtanam, hearing and chanting, is considered to be the watering process. And the fertility of soil is compared to the Vaishnava qualities. So if only watering process is going on, means only we are doing shravanam and kirtanam and then trying to nourish the seed of bhakti which we have received from a bona fide Vaishnava guru, and if we do not have the fertile soil of Vaishnava qualities like humility, satisfaction and tolerance, etc., respectful attitude, then the bhakti lata will not effectively grow. So we need to cultivate these qualities. These are all sadhu bhushana. So when we practice devotional service, our practice should also be accompanied with an attempt to cultivate these qualities. And by sincere practice of bhakti, these qualities will eventually manifest in the personality of a devotee, but one should also consciously develop those qualities. So, Vaishnava qualities and the process of hearing and chanting and receiving the potent seed of bhakti from a Vaishnava guru, so all these three put together will make one's devotional life very effective and progressive, and one can advance nicely to the lotus feet of Krishna. So, devotees are active in hearing and chanting and remembering Krishna. So, one has to seek attachment from such devotees, Kapiladeva says. In the 25th shloka of this chapter, Kapiladeva emphasizes on the association of devotees and he also describes the results of association of devotees. Satam prasangan mama virya samvido bhavanti hrutkarna rasayana kathaha tajyoshanada swapavargavartmani shraddharatir bhaktir anukramishyati. He says, Satam prasangan mama virya samvido. Means, all the devotees are accustomed to describing the glories of Krishna. So, in the association of devotees, there is a constant glorification and discussion of Krishna katha. Mama virya samvido bhavanti hrutkarna rasayanaha katha. That Krishna katha in the Sangha of Vaishnavas will act as nectar to the ears. Tad joshanada swapavargavartmani shraddha ratir bhaktir anukramishyati. By exposing ourselves to the association of devotees and hearing Krishna katha in that association, our shraddha, means our faith in Krishna, will increase. And bhaktir, shraddha ratir bhaktir anukramishyati, our faith will increase, our attraction towards Krishna will increase, and eventually we will attain prema for the Lord. Basically, hearing Krishna katha in the association of devotees will take us through the initial stages to the final stages of bhakti. Initial stage is shraddha, means faith in the Lord, and final stage is prema. So we can pass through all these stages of devotional service only by hearing in the association of pure devotees. And jnana and yoga, means ashtanga yoga and jnana yoga or sankhya yoga, they are incomplete without this bhakti. So, we should perform bhakti. Then after Kapiladeva has elaborated on this adhyatmika yoga and established the superiority of bhakti in this adhyatmika yoga, Mother Devahuti asked her second question. She said, my dear Lord, what kind of bhakti should I perform to easily attain you? Then our Kapiladeva says that, Devahuti also asks her third and fourth questions in this context only. So please tell me, what kind of bhakti should I perform to easily attain you? That is second question. Third question is, please also elaborate on this process of Sankhya or Jnana. And third question is, please also elaborate on the process of Ashtanga Yoga. So she asked these two questions. She wanted an elaboration of Sankhya and Ashtanga Yoga, not to practice them, but to increase her appreciation for bhakti yoga. Because adhyatmika yoga contains all these three things. Ashtanga is also there, jnana or sankhya is also there, then bhakti is also there, but bhakti is best. But she wanted to know the other two also, just to have a contrast and comparison between these two, and to increase her conviction on bhakti. So she wanted to practice bhakti only, not these two, but she wanted an explanation of these two also. And Kapiladeva elaborates. Now, he answers the second question. So, he says, what kind of bhakti should she perform to easily attain him? So, Kapiladeva says, we have to perform bhakti without any material desires. Okay, there are two kinds of bhakti. There are vaidhi bhakti and bhava bhakti. So, vaidhi bhakti means you perform devotional service according to the regulations of scriptures and instructions of guru. Although we do not have spontaneous attraction to perform bhakti, still we perform that bhakti because we know it is good for us. And we know it is a recommendation of scriptures and guru. So there is a regulated practice of bhakti. But bhava bhakti is that stage where we naturally feel attraction towards bhakti. Means we naturally like to serve Krishna. Here we are doing it as a practice in vaidhi. And there we do it very spontaneously in Raganuga or in Bhava Bhakti. So one has to perform bhava bhakti without any material desires. That is the best form of bhakti. But if one cannot perform that, right in the initial stages only, we cannot develop bhava or emotions towards the Lord and perform bhakti with so much of love and affection. So we have to practice. Although we do not have sufficient love and affection, we practice bhakti because we know it is good for us. So basically, summary of the answer is perform bhava bhakti. When Devahuti asked him, what kind of bhakti should I perform to easily attain you? Then Kapila says, you perform bhava bhakti. But if you are not ready for it, perform vaidhi bhakti. Means you perform natural, spontaneous devotional service with emotions. But if you don't have that many emotions, at least you try to practice to cultivate that emotions, to invoke that bhava. Actually, we have that. We have love for Krishna, but that is covered because of material desires and false ego and the whole material ambience in this conditioned world. So we have to invoke it by doing practices. Say, attending Mangal Arati, chanting the holy names of the Lord, studying the scriptures, associating with devotees, eating prasadam, and all, and darshan of dham, and serving Vaishnavas, and hearing from devotees. So all these are elements of practice of devotional service. And when we perfect this practice, we will continue to do these same activities with spontaneity, with love, with affection, with emotion. And he quotes this beautiful shloka. Devanam gunalinganam anusravika karmanam sattva evaika manaso vrittihi svabhaviki tuyam. So basically he says we have to engage all our senses in the performance of devotional service spontaneously. But if it is not possible, we can come to vaidhi. And vaidhi sadhana bhakta, a person can attain bhava by performing vaidhi. Means if one practice various elements of devotional service, one can develop emotions for Krishna. So then what are the different practices? He says, from the 34th sloka till 38th sloka, he describes various characteristics of a devotee who is practicing bhakti, vaidhi bhakti, to attain raganuga stage. So one should never desire impersonal liberation. And one should always engage in the service of Krishna's lotus feet. One should glorify his activities in the association of devotees. And one should see the beautiful darshan of the Lord. One should engage in talks favorable to the Lord. So like that, there are so many elements in practice of bhakti. So Kapila Dev describes all these practices and then says that fear of material world can only be overcome by practice of bhakti. And all the devatas work in fear of me. So the fears that exist in this material world can completely be destroyed and vanquished by performance of bhakti. So in this way, he elaborates on practice of bhakti. And he finally concludes saying that we have to perform tivra bhakti. Tivra means intense. So we have to intensify our practice of bhakti. We should not perform bhakti in a very feeble and distracted and interrupted and irregulated manner. So we need to focus on the practice of bhakti. So that's why he says tivra bhakti, intense bhakti. Now, for example, there are some lights here, bulbs here. So if the bulb is having very less intensity, it can illuminate only one corner of the room. And in that, if you have to study a book, we have to go to that corner and then read under that small table lamp. But if the room is illuminated with a very strong light, that has more illumination, that has more intensity, that intensity of light can fill the entire room. So similarly, if the intensity of our practice of bhakti is very less, we'll advance and we'll progress very slowly. But if we intensify our practice, if the intensity of our practice of bhakti is very high, then we can come very closer to Krishna very fast, very quickly. So basically he emphasizes tivra bhakti. So that completes the 25th chapter of third canto and we come to the 26th chapter. So in the 25th chapter, basically we discuss two questions. Mother Devahuti asked her first question. She said that, my dear Lord, I am under your illusion. I am influenced by Maya and I am in this aham mameti conception or the conception of I and mine. So please dispel this illusion. Then Kapila Deva said that this ahammameti conception or bodily conception can be dispelled by adhyatmika yoga. And adhyatmika yoga has three parts. One is sankhya or jnana, second is ashtanga yoga, third is bhakti. Of these three, bhakti is superior. And he elaborated on bhakti. And that bhakti is best developed in the association of devotees. And he described the characteristics of devotees. And after that, Mother Devahuti asked three more questions. She said that, what kind of bhakti should I perform to easily attain you? Second, please elaborate on the process of sankhya and also elaborate on the process of yoga. Now, in the second, and Kapiladev answered the second question saying that we have to perform bhava bhakti, and if you are not ready for bhava bhakti, perform regulated practices of bhakti, that is vaidhi bhakti, to develop that bhava or emotions towards the Lord. Now, we will come to the third question. Third question of Mother Devahuti is, what is the process of jnana? I want to elaborately understand the whole process of sankhya or jnana. So as we discussed, sankhya is enumeration of material elements and analyzing material elements, matter and spirit both. And jnana means knowledge. So you develop knowledge by analysis of this world, analysis of matter and spirit. So that that's why this jnana and sankhya are sometimes interchangeably used. So you develop analytical knowledge. Jnana is knowledge of matter and spirit, and sankhya is analysis of matter and spirit by which you develop knowledge. So he elaborates on this sankhya. So in the 26th chapter of third canto, Kapiladev describes the benefits of hearing sankhya in the first two shlokas. He says, by developing analytical knowledge of matter and spirit, or by sankhya or jnana, we will be freed from modes and we will attain perfection, and we can cut the knots of attachment to this material realm. So he begins. Basically, there are three things: jiva, Ishvara, and Prakriti. Three things. Ishvara is also called Purusha. Jiva, Purusha, and Prakriti. Prakriti is material nature, Purusha is the Supreme Lord, God, and Jiva is the living entity. So Sankhya Yoga constitutes of analyzing these three, characteristics of these three. And Prakriti has multiple aspects. So that involves multiple elements, say 23 elements. So Prakriti will manifest multiple ingredients. So we will analyze these three. So Jiva is the living entity, so who is spiritual in nature, who is a fragmental part of Purusha, the Supreme Lord. And Prakriti is the material energy of the Lord. In Bhagavad Gita also Krishna says, para prakriti, apara prakriti. So now the Jiva, when he is in the conditioned world, he has a lot of material desires. And these material desires are sanctioned by the Purusha, by the Supreme Lord. And these desires are facilitated. The fulfillment of these desires is facilitated by Prakriti. So this is the interaction between Jiva, Prakriti, and Purusha. So now first he describes the characteristics of Purusha. He says there is no beginning, there is no end for this Purusha. And the interaction of Purusha and Prakriti is only a pastime. The Lord interacts with the material energy, and the Jiva is bewildered by this material energy or Prakriti. The Lord is never bewildered by this Prakriti. So Prakriti is material nature, or the external energy, or the material energy of the Lord. So the same word is can be used to describe material energy or external energy or Maya. So all these are like interchangeably used, Prakriti, Maya, and all that. So Prakriti is the cause of the Jiva's actions by facilitating the necessary things for the acting of Jiva, and Purusha is the cause of the results of his actions. Now, after describing Prakriti, Purusha, and Jiva, Kapiladev elaborately analyzes various products of Prakriti. So the Lord's energy is time factor. Time is Lord's energy. So this time is the instigator of the material modes. And later, various products of Prakriti are Mahatattva, or Chitta, consciousness, Ahankara, false ego, then Manas, mind, బుద్ధి ఇంటెలిజెన్స్ అహంకార ఫాల్స్ ఈగో ఇంద్రియ ద సెన్సెస్ అండ్ తన్మాత్రస్ మీన్స్ సెన్స్ ఆబ్జెక్ట్స్ అండ్ వేరియస్ ఎలిమెంట్స్ గ్రాస్ ఎలిమెంట్స్ లైక్ ఎర్త్ వాటర్ ఫైర్ ఎయిర్ ఈథర్ సో దీస్ ఆర్ ఆల్ ప్రొడక్ట్స్ ఆఫ్ ప్రకృతి అండ్ కపిలదేవ్ డిస్క్రైబ్స్ ద క్యారెక్టరిస్టిక్స్ ఆఫ్ ఆల్ దిస్ ప్రొడక్ట్స్ ఆఫ్ ప్రకృతి సో వీ డిస్కస్డ్ ఆల్రెడీ ఇన్ ద థర్డ్ క్యాంట్ ఆఫ్ ఫిఫ్త్ చాప్టర్ అండ్ సెకండ్ క్యాంట్ ఆఫ్ ఫిఫ్త్ చాప్టర్ దట్ దిస్ universe comes from the body of Mahavishnu in the form of initially it was like pradhana material nature or prakriti and this pradhana gets transformed into mahatattva and mahatattva gets transformed into ahankara and ahankara in three modes sattva guna rajaguna tamoguna will give rise to 23 elements and ahankara in mode of goodness gives rise to mind and devatas and ahankara in the mode of passion will give rise to intelligence and the senses and ahankara or false ego in the mode of ignorance will give rise to five sense objects and five gross elements so all these elements are analyzed their characteristics are spoken for example ahankara is a product of mahatattva and the presiding deity of ahankara is lord sankarsana and the characteristics are only because of false ego the living entity starts thinking that he is the doer so false ego will induce will pressurize us to think that we are something that we are not so we think that we are males we are females we are Indians we are Americans or human beings or non humans or brahmacharis or grihasthas or kshatriyas or brahmanas or wealthy merchants or poor people so all these are external designations basically we are souls we are servants of God so that is our original identity in assuming any other identity other than this original identity is basically maya because of false ego that is ahankara misidentification so that is the nature of false ego that instigates the conditioned soul to believe that he is something that which he is not and mind is a product of false ego mind is like a subservient of false ego now because of false ego we identify ourselves as something and mind will start mind's functions are thinking feeling and willing mind will start to think or feel or will according to that identity false identity so as male or female or Indian or American etc etc then buddhi intelligence so intelligence helps in ascertaining the nature of objects so by intelligence we can analyze things and if the intelligence is fixed upon attaining sense gratification all the intellectual planning or scheming is centered on attaining that sense gratification then indriya senses so senses only through senses we will function and senses are constantly running behind sense objects senses are two categories knowledge senses and working senses eyes ears and nose mouth etc skin they are all knowledge senses and the working senses are their hands and legs etc so there are tanmatras means sense objects they are like sound touch then form taste and smell these are the sense objects so sense objects are this tanmatras they are called tanmatras these tanmatras are subtle and gross elements are gross the earth water fire air ether are gross so from sound ether manifests from ether touch manifests from touch comes air from air comes form from form comes fire from fire comes taste from taste comes water from water comes smell and from smell comes earth element so like that one subtle element will give rise to one gross element so like that all the elements will start manifesting and all this manifestation of elements is only because of the glance of the Lord as we have discussed in the third canto fifth chapter also so Kapila describes all this and he describes the characteristics of all these elements also for instance he says that touch so because of this tanmatra touch so we can experience softness hardness cold heat etc and because of air air is moving and air leads sense objects to the senses and gives life to the senses, because aids are there within, aids are there outside also. Like that, he basically describes the characteristics. We cannot go deep into all the characteristics in this Pravaha class. And water's nature is moistening and causes satisfaction, gives life, relieves thirst. So like that, there are so many characteristics. So describing the characteristics of all these material elements is basically jnana or sankhya. Sankhya is enumeration of these elements and analysis of these elements. And we analyze these elements based on their connection with the Supreme Lord. Ultimately, all these elements manifested from Mahavishnu. We acknowledge the connection of all these material elements with God. So only God manifested all these elements. Some people, there may be so many scientists or students of science, they also analyze matter. So the difference between that analysis of matter and this analysis of matter or material elements presented by Kapiladev in this third canto is that there is, in this analysis, the connection between these elements with God is also acknowledged. All these elements are manifested from God, manifested from Mahavishnu's body. So we analyze matter and spirit also, and we see the connection between that matter and spirit. And we also understand the eternal nature of spirit and temporary nature of matter. And we also try to disentangle our eternal spiritual souls with this temporary material body after analyzing this matter. So that's the whole Sankhya analysis. So after completing this analysis of Sankhya and also manifestation of Virat Rupa, basically various these elements combine with each other to form the universe, which we have already discussed. And within the universe, all the planetary systems are formed and all the demigods manifested. And conceiving all these planetary systems as the bodily limbs of the Lord is called Virat Rupa or universal form. And considering all the demigods as various limbs of this Lord, that is also Virat Rupa description. Like that, Virat Rupa is described in various ways. The form of the Lord is compared to different demigods. The form of the Lord is compared to different planetary systems. The form of Lord is compared to different varanas, sometimes different ashramas, and sometimes as combination of all the jivas. So like the different descriptions of universal form are there. So he describes all that. And that completes the 26th chapter of third canto. Then we enter the 27th chapter. In the 27th chapter, Kapiladev continues this Jnana section or the Sankhya section. In this, he specifically analyzes the situation of the conditioned soul. He says the jiva, the conditioned jiva, is unaffected by gunas. In his original constitutional position, we have nothing to do with gunas. But somehow, because of false ego and because of misidentifying oneself with matter, we get overwhelmed with material modes. And our conditioned life begins. For example, there is a golden ring. And if this golden ring falls into some gutter or some Suez canal, will the golden ring lose its qualities? Definitely not. And just because this golden ring fell in this gutter, in this sewage, or in this mud, that does not mean we just leave the golden ring. Oh, this is contaminated. This is gone now. So let me just go ahead. This is 50,000 rupees golden ring. So we have to take it. So even at the cost of putting our hand inside that sewage and then picking it up, and then we will do all that. We will not hesitate to do it because it's very costly. It is 50,000 rupees. And you pick it up and then wash it nicely. If needed, you wash it with soap properly and then again wear it because it is valuable. And it is not affected by it. For example, a food item falls into gutter, we will not take it back. Our handkerchief falls into gutter, we will not take it back. Or some paper may just fall into sewage because it just gets mixed with that water, and that paper is not usable anymore. So paper or cloth or some food item or something else which can mix with this gutter is not usable anymore. But this golden ring has to be used. You can pick it up and then wash it and use it again. So the conditioned souls, association with material energy or matter, or entanglement of conditioned soul within this material world, which is filled with the material modes, is like a gold's contact with gutter. So, conditioned soul's real qualities of being Sat Chit Ananda are not lost by being in this material world. So we just have to uncover. The golden ring may stay in that Suez. You are frantically searching for that golden ring. And you are searching everywhere in that Suez canal. And then after searching for half an hour, you may get it. For half an hour, this golden ring is in that gutter. But once you retrieve it from gutter and wash it nicely, it is usable again. Similarly, the conditioned soul, which is like gold, Satchit Ananda, the soul does not lose his qualities of being Satchit Ananda. And the soul does not mix with matter. So when the material body is gone, the soul can go to another body. The soul can go to the spiritual world also. And again reinstated in his original constitutional position in service of the Lord. So like that, in this beautiful chapter, Kapiladev describes that the jiva is unaffected by gunas. But because of false ego, one starts thinking that I am the proprietor of this world, or I am, and he assumes so many material identities, temporary identities. That leads to samsara. And constant meditation of sense objects will entangle him further. The solution is to control the mind and to perform bhakti. So when the golden ring is there in the gutter, its glory is not seen. Its shine is not seen. And the original purpose of the golden ring is to decorate the hand or the finger of a man or a woman. That's the original purpose. Similarly, the original purpose of the soul is to render service to Krishna. That's our original purpose. But the golden ring fell into the gutter and the conditioned soul is rotting in this material existence. So once you pick up that golden ring and then wash it nicely and again wear it, its purpose is served. Similarly, once the soul is exposed to the washing process, the cleansing process of bhakti yoga, again the soul's original glory will manifest. Original glory of being a servant of the Lord, original engagement of rendering seva, loving service to the Lord, is again possible. So the whole process of bhakti yoga is the way of reinstating the conditioned soul in his original glory as servant of God. So one has to practice bhakti yoga. And Kapiladev describes further beautiful aspects of this conditioned soul in this world. And he gives some examples. So how do we perceive this presence of soul in this body? So coming to the basic question, he gives an example. Now, sun is reflecting. Like sunshine is there. So sun is reflected in the water. And the water's reflection means sun is reflected in the water and the water is reflected on the wall. When the water is reflected on the wall, you can see some shining white patch there. So you can understand that sun is existent. So sun is reflected in the water and water is reflected in the wall. So seeing the wall, you are not seeing the sun. You are seeing the wall. You can understand the presence of sun. Similarly, the pure soul is reflected by this false ego and then he is reflected on the body which is made of senses. So the false ego is subtle. And the senses and the body are gross. So the pure soul is influenced by this false ego. And that false ego is manifested through this body. This material body. Just as sun reflected in water and the water reflected in the on the wall. Similarly, the soul is influenced by false ego. And that false ego is exhibited through material body. So the very fact that the material body is functioning in a certain manner shows the presence of false ego. Oh, because of false ego, this body, this person is behaving like this. We can understand. And because ego is basically identification. Because you have a certain identity, you can also understand the presence of soul there. So the pure jiva is influenced by ahankara and is reflected in body and senses. So basically the soul has to remove these coverings of false ego, remove the coverings of subtle false ego and gross material body. The pure spirit soul is covered by the subtle body made of ego, mind and intelligence. Basically intelligence and mind would act as subservience to false ego. That is, in the subtle body, false ego is very prominent. And there is a gross body, which is made of earth, water, fire, air, ether. When the coverings of this gross and subtle bodies are removed, the original glory and nature of the pure spirit soul will manifest. That is the whole process of liberation. By intense practice of bhakti yoga, one can remove the coverings of subtle and gross bodies, false ego on the soul, and then the soul can be reinstated in his devotional service. So this is a quick summary of the 27th chapter. So that completes the jnana section or sankhya section. Now we come to the fourth question asked by Mother Devahuti. So Devahuti first question was, please dispel my illusion because I am influenced by aham mamiti conception. And Kapila Dev answered that question saying that you have to practice adhyatmika yoga in which there is bhakti, there is jnana and there is ashtanga yoga. Of these three, bhakti is superior. Then Devahuti asked the second question, what kind of bhakti should I perform to easily attain you? Then he said that you should perform bhava bhakti, means devotional service with emotions. But if you can't manage that, if you don't have that emotions, practice bhakti with your senses so that you can develop that emotions. That is second answer. Then third question is, elaborate in the process of sankhya or jnana. Then Kapiladev described the manifestation of all the material elements and he described the characteristics of all these material elements. And also he described the characteristics of jiva and purusha. Jiva, purusha and prakriti. So that is sankhya. And he elaborated on the conditioned state of the jiva also. Then the fourth question is about yoga or ashtanga yoga. In the 28th chapter, Kapila describes ashtanga yoga in great detail. And ashtanga yoga is basically 8 kinds of practices. Mm-hmm. 8 kinds of practices. The 8 kinds of practices are number 1, yama. Number 2, niyama. Then asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana and samadhi. These are the 8 practices of ashtanga yoga. Ashta means 8. Anga is limbs. Yoga is connection with the supreme. So by these 8 kinds of practices, if you are making an attempt to connect with the supreme, that is called ashtanga yoga. So first 2 are yama and niyama, means do's and don'ts, prescriptions and prohibitions, or rules and regulations. So there are so many such rules and regulations. Like one has to execute the prescribed duties which are mentioned in the scriptures according to one's varna and ashram. Then secondly, one has to be satisfied with whatever one achieves. One has to eat very frugally. One should be non-violent. One should be truthful. One should practice austerity, cleanliness, study of the Vedas. One should practice silence. So these are various do's and don'ts that are favorable for spiritual practices. That is, are the first 2 limbs, yama and niyama, are do's and don'ts. Then third is asana. Asana means so many sitting postures. So by doing asanas, one can attain steadiness in mastering these asanas. By mastering the asanas, one can attain steadiness in one's practice. So sitting posture should be proper. Then second is pranayama. Pranayama means controlling breath. Puraka, Rechaka, Kumbhaka. Means there is we have to control the air that goes in and air that comes out. Inhaling, exhaling and holding the breath. That is pranayama exercises. Then pratyahara means withdrawing the senses from sense objects. The mind can go anywhere while you are practicing yoga. So we have to withdraw the mind and make it focus on the yoga. That is called pratyahara. Then next is dharana. Dharana means meditation. So meditating on the beautiful form of the Lord is called dharana. And dhyana is also meditating on the form of the Lord. But dhyana is more intensified meditation where you focus on each and every limb of the Lord. Then next stage, final stage is samadhi, or absorbing oneself completely into the beautiful form of the Lord and going into trance, that is called samadhi. So now, what are the effects of practicing all these limbs? So by doing pranayama, one can destroy the doshas within the body. There are so many imbalances of kapha, vata, pitta, etc. in the body. So that imbalances can be destroyed by doing pranayama. Then dharana destroys sins. Pratyahara frees one from material association with material modes. And dhyana frees one from modes completely. So pratyahara destroys our association with sense objects, and dhyana destroys our modes, material modes. So these are various limbs of Ashtanga Yoga and different results of those limbs. Now, till pratyahara stage, one can come little faster, but dharana and dhyana are quite elaborate stages where you meditate on the Lord. So the first five limbs are only preparations. Yama, niyama means do's and don'ts. It's like preparatory stage. Asana, sitting postures. And pranayama, breathing exercises. Pratyahara, withdrawing the mind. So these five preliminary stages of Ashtanga Yoga are only meant to prepare us for meditating on the Lord. Basically, Ashtanga Yoga is also called Dhyana Yoga because meditating on the Lord is the main element there. The first five are only preparations. And meditation is in two ways. One is dharana, meditating on the overall form of the Lord. Second is dhyana, meditating on every limb of the Lord, intensified meditation. And the final stage is samadhi, where you get completely absorbed in the Lord. So that absorption in the Lord, intensified meditation of the Lord is called Ashtanga Yoga, which is also called Dhyana Yoga. Now, Kapiladeva describes dharana and dhyana elaborately. Now we will take some time and then go through this dharana and dhyana stages. One may think that if we have to practice devotional service, bhakti yoga, what is the relevance of this Ashtanga Yoga? Yes, certain elements of Ashtanga Yoga are also relevant for, they are also favorable for practice of devotional service. Now this dhyana stage and dharana stage, which is meditation on the limbs of the Lord, is relevant for bhakti yogis also. We can take shelter of these shlokas, beautiful shlokas, and we can meditate on the beautiful deity form of the Lord when we take darshan of the Lord. Okay, so we will discuss the dharana stage. Third canto, 28th chapter, 13th shloka. We will recite all these shlokas and then try to elaborate on them. And all these descriptions of the forms of the Lord are very important and relevant for bhakti yogis also, because we are all personalists. We are not impersonalists. We believe that God is a person and He has a beautiful form. Thus, we relish the descriptions of the form of the Supreme Lord in His various incarnations and other forms. So, 13th shloka says, Prasannavadanam bhojam padma garbharunikshanam neelotpaladalashyamam shankhachakragadadharam. You can see the picture also, where Vishnu is being depicted there. Prasanna vadanam bhojam. His beautiful face is very pleasant. Padma garbharunekshanam. And his eyes are reddish like the inside of a lotus. Padma garbharuna ikshanam. Neelotpala dalashyamam. His bodily color or complexion is like the petals of blue lotus. Shankha chakra gadadharam. And he is also holding Shankha, Chakra and Gada. So that is one shloka. Next, this is all dharana, meditating on the overall form of the Lord. Lasat pankaja kinjalka pita kauseya vasasam srivatsavakshasam bharajat kaustubhamukta kandharam. So in this beautiful shloka, 14th shloka, we see that lasat pankaja kinjalka pita kauseya vasasam. This describes the dress of Krishna, dress of the Lord. That is of the color of yellow. So the pollen of lotus flower is yellow in color, very bright and shining yellow. Lasat means resplendent. Pankaja kinjalka means, panka is mud. Pankaja means that which is born of mud. That is lotus. Lasat pankaja kinjalka. So the Lord's, the color of the Lord's dress is yellow, which is like the lotus pollen. And Srivatsavaksha Sambhrajat Kaustubhamukta Kandharam. The Lord has Srivatsa mark on his chest and he has a beautiful Kaustubha Mani hanging from his neck. Next shloka, 15th shloka.
Mattadvirefa kalaya paritam vanamalaya parardhyaharavalaya kiritangadanupuram.
Mattadvirefa kalaya. The Lord wears a beautiful garland which is encircled by intoxicated bees. The Lord wears garland which is so fresh. The garland has flowers that will never fade. They are all spiritual flowers. And bumblebees, honeybees still get attracted for the honey within this flowers which is inside the garland of the Lord.
Mattadvirefa kalaya paritam vanamalaya parardhya hara valaya.
And he also wears a beautiful necklace. Kiritangada nupuram. And he has kirita. He has this mukut. And nupuram. And he also has beautiful anklets. And next shloka.
Kanchi gunolasa shronim hridayam bhoja vishtaram darshaniyatamam shantam mano nayanavardhanam.
16th shloka says, Kanchi gunolasa shronim hridayam bhoja vishtaram. The Lord actually manifests within the hearts of devotees who meditate on his beautiful form. And darshaniyatamam shantam. Darshaniya means that which is worth seeing. The best thing that we can see is the form of Krishna. Darshaniya. Darshan means the vision of the Lord. Darshaniya means that which is seeing, that which is worth seeing. Darshaniya tamam. So darshaniya is that which is worth seeing. Darshaniya tara means that which is very much worth seeing. And darshaniya tama means that which is most worth seeing. There is no other worthiest object of our vision than Krishna's darshan. Darshaniya tamam shantam mano nayanavardhanam. When we take darshan of Krishna's beautiful form in the temple, then mano nayanavardhanam, our mind becomes very satisfied, our eyes also become very satisfied. Next, 17th shloka.
Apichya darshanam shashvat sarvaloka namaskritam santam vayasi kaishore bhrityanugrahakataram.
Apichya darshanam shashvat sarvaloka namaskritam. We have to take darshan of this beautiful form of Krishna, and that form of Krishna is worshipable by all the residents and all the rulers of all the planets in all the universes. Right? Sarvaloka namaskritam. All the people in all the planets will come and do namaskar to this beautiful form. And santam vayasi kaishore. The form of Krishna is very youthful. Santam vayasi kaishore bhrityanugraha kataram. And the Lord also bestows his anugraha on his bhrityas. Means his mercy on his servants. Bhritya means servant, anugraha is mercy. The Lord is very merciful. So not only the Lord's beautiful darshan is pleasing to the eyes and mind, the Lord's affectionate and compassionate glances will relieve us from all distresses. So,
Kirtanya tirtha yashasham punya shloka yashaskaram dhyaye devam samagrangam yavannachyavate manaha.
Kirtanya tirtha yashasham. The Lord's yashasa, the Lord's glories are like tirthas, holy places of pilgrimage. Kirtanya, they are worth describing. The Lord's glories are worth describing and they are glorious.
Punya shloka yashaskaram.
And the Lord also is very keen on expanding the glories of his devotees.
Dhyaye devam samagrangam.
As a part of this dharana, one has to meditate on all the limbs of the Lord. Anga is limbs. Samagranga means all the limbs. So far whatever meditation that we have done on the Lord's form is an overall meditation on his entire figure. So now, and by doing this, our mind will just get captivated in the beautiful form of the Lord. And after doing this, when the heart is filled with the beauty of Krishna's form, one should intensify one's meditation by meditating on each and every limb of the Lord. That's what Kapila says in the 19th and 20th shlokas. 20th shloka, he says, then fix the mind on each individual limb of the Lord. Now, 21st shloka. Let us begin our meditation by meditating on the lotus feet of the Lord.
సంచింతయేద్ భగవతశ్చరణారవిందం వజ్రాంకుశధ్వజ సరోరుహ లాంఛనాఢ్యం ఉత్తుంగ రక్త విలసన్ నఖ చక్రవాల జ్యోత్స్నాభిరాహత మహద్ హృదయాంధకారం సంచింతయేద్ భగవతశ్చరణారవిందం. వన్ హ్యాస్ టు మెడిటేట్ ఆన్ ద లోటస్ ఫీట్ ఆఫ్ ద లార్డ్. సంచింతయేద్, చింతయేద్ మీన్స్ మెడిటేటింగ్. భగవతశ్చరణారవిందం ఆన్ ద లోటస్ ఫీట్ ఆఫ్ ద లార్డ్. వజ్ర అంకుశ ధ్వజ సరోరుహ లాంఛనాఢ్యం, యు కెన్ సీ ద పిక్చర్ దేర్. ద లార్డ్స్ బ్యూటిఫుల్ లోటస్ ఫీట్ ఆర్ డెకరేటెడ్ విత్ ఆస్పీషియస్ మార్క్స్ ఆఫ్ వజ్ర, ఎలిఫెంట్ గోట్. వజ్ర ఇస్ థండర్ బోల్ట్, అంకుశ ఎలిఫెంట్ గోట్, దెన్ ధ్వజ a flag, saroruha lotus. These are all various auspicious symbols on the soles of the Lord's feet. We have to meditate on them. And uttunga rakta vilasanna khachakravala jyotsna bhirahata mahad hridayandhakaram. When we take the darshan of the lotus feet of Krishna, the effulgence emanating from the toenails of Krishna will dispel the thick dark gloom of ignorance that is there within our hearts. So when we expose ourselves to the effulgence emanating from the toenails of Krishna, our ignorance is destroyed. That is the effect of taking darshan of Krishna's lotus feet. Further description of Krishna's lotus feet.
Yat shaucha nishrita sarit pravarodakena teerthena murnyadhikrutena shiva shivo bhuvat dhyatur manah shamala shaila nisrishta vajram ధ్యాయేచ్చిరం భగవతశ్చరణారవిందం యత్ శౌచ నిశ్రిత సరిత్ ప్రవరోదకేన.
ది ప్రవర ఉదక మీన్స్ ద బెస్ట్ ఆఫ్ ఆల్ రివర్స్ దట్ ఇస్ గ్యాంజెస్ దట్ ఎమనేటెడ్ ఫ్రమ్ ది లోటస్ ఫీట్ ఆఫ్ ద లార్డ్. ద వాటర్ దట్ వాష్డ్ ది లోటస్ ఫీట్ ఆఫ్ ద లార్డ్ విల్ బికమ్ ది మోస్ట్ హోలియెస్ట్ రివర్ కాల్డ్ గ్యాంజెస్. తీర్థేన మూర్ధని అధికృతేన శివ శివోభూత్. బై హోల్డింగ్ దట్ గ్యాంజెస్ వాటర్ ఆన్ హిస్ హెడ్ ది ఆస్పీషియస్ లార్డ్ శివ విల్ బికమ్ ఆల్ ది మోర్ ఆస్పీషియస్. ధ్యాతుర్ మనః శమల శైల నిసృష్ట వజ్రం. బై మెడిటేటింగ్ ఆన్ దాట్ లోటస్ ఫీట్ ఆఫ్ ద లార్డ్ విచ్ ఆర్ ది సోర్స్ ఆఫ్ గ్యాంజెస్ రివర్ వన్ కెన్ డిస్ట్రాయ్ ది మౌంటైన్ ఆఫ్ సిన్ దట్ ఈస్ దేర్ ఇన్ వన్స్ హార్ట్. ద మెడిటేషన్ ఆన్ ది లోటస్ ఫీట్ ఆఫ్ ద లార్డ్ will act like a thunderbolt that can destroy the mountain of sin in our hearts. So dhyaye chiram bhagavatas charanaravindam, for a long time meditate on the lotus feet of the Lord. This is how we have to meditate when we take darshan of Krishna's lotus feet, when we go in front of the altar. You can see that picture where Shiva is getting purified by the Ganges water emanating from the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. The next shloka.
జానుద్వయం జల జలోచనయా జనన్య లక్ష్మ్యాఖిలస్య సురవందితయా విధాతుః ఊర్వోర్ నిధాయ కరపల్లవ రోచిషాయత్ సంలాలితం హృది విభోర భవస్య కుర్యాత్. జానుద్వయం జల జలోచనయా జనన్య.
జలజ మీన్స్ దాట్ విచ్ ఇస్ బార్న్ అవుట్ ఆఫ్ జల వాటర్ దట్ ఈస్ లోటస్. జలజ లోచనయ మీన్స్ one who has lotus eyes. Jalaja lochanaya jananya, janani means mother. That lotus-eyed mother Lakshmi is always seen massaging the calves of Lord Vishnu. So we have meditated on the lotus feet of the Lord till now. Now our meditation will progress further and we meditate on the calves of the Lord, the portion between the lotus feet and the knees. So that is the calf portion. So Mother Lakshmi is constantly massaging those beautiful legs of the Lord. Janudvayam jalajalochanaya jananya lakshmyakhilasya suravanditaya vidhatuhu. Although Mother Lakshmi is considered the mother of Brahma and all the demigods would come and worship her, still she takes pleasure in massaging the feet of the Lord like that. And vidhatuhu jananya, she is considered the mother of Brahma. Not that she has given birth to Brahma. Who gave birth to Brahma? Vishnu has given birth to Brahma. And Lakshmi is the wife of Vishnu. So what is the relationship between Brahma and Lakshmi? That is basically mother. So now Lakshmi became the mother of Brahma because Lakshmi is the wife of the father of Brahma. Not that she has given birth to Brahma. And Urvar Nidhaya Karapallava Rochishayat, and her very delicate, soft fingers are shining as she is pressing the legs of Mahavishnu, of Garbhodaksai Vishnu. Samlalitam Hridivi Bhor Abhavasya Kuryat. One has to hold that lotus feet of the Lord within one's heart. And our meditation on the lotus feet of the Lord is not complete without meditating on the activities of Mother Lakshmi. So we have to meditate on the activities of Lakshmi also, who is constantly rendering service to Krishna's feet. The next sloka, 24th sloka. This is meditation on the thighs and hips of the Lord.
Uru suparna bhujayor adhishobhamanav ojo nidhi atasika kusumava bhasav vyalambi pita varava sasi vartamana kanchi kalapa parirambhinitamba bimbam. Uru suparna bhujayor adhishobhamanav.
When the Lord sits on the back of Garuda, his thighs appear very prominent. So these thighs of the Lord are storehouses of energy. Lot of energy.
Uru suparana bhujayor suparana.
Parana means wings, suparana means good wings. The wings of Garuda are said to be just emanating the Vedic sound vibrations. When he is flapping the wings, Vedic sound vibrations will come.
Uru suparana bhujayor.
When the Lord is sitting on the back of Garuda, his thighs will appear very prominent. And ojo nidhi, they are treasure houses of all energies. Atasika kusumava bhasav, they are of the complexion, of the color of a linseed flower. So they appear so beautiful, we have to meditate on the thighs of the Lord. So it's progressively going from the lotus feet to the lotus face. Next. Next is about meditation on the navel and nipples of the Lord. So 25th sloka says,
Nabhi hradam bhuvana kosha guhodarastham yatratma yoni dhishana khila loka padmam vyodham harinmani vrishastanayoramushya dhyayedvayam vishadaharamayukha gauram.
Nabhi hradam bhuvana kosha guhodarastham. The lotus navel of the Lord, a lotus flower emanates from the lotus navel of the Lord.
Nabhi hradam bhuvana kosha guhodarastam.
The lotus navel of the Lord is the source of the birth of all the planetary systems in the universe. One of the expansions of the Lord is Garbhodaksai Vishnu. From the lotus navel of Garbhodaksai Vishnu, a lotus will sprout and Brahmaji takes birth on the lotus, and in that lotus stem all the 14 planetary systems are there. Thus, the lotus navel of the Lord is the source of all the planets within the universe. Actually, the universe comes out of the lotus of the Lord, and the universe looks back into the Lord's form and then becomes very regretful. How did I leave that beautiful form of the Lord? In the Rudra Gita, this is described.
Pura rechaka samvigna vali valgudalodaram pratisankrama yadvishvam nabhya vartaga bhirayat.
Means, the universe that came out of the navel of the Lord will look back into the Lord and then sees the beauty of the Lord's navel and says, I want to go back, I want to go back. But because of the Lord's will, the universe will just still stay there to accommodate all the living entities. That is the beauty of Krishna's navel. Kunti also glorifies the navel of the Lord.
So, yatratma yoni dhishana akhila loka padmam.
So, it is the source of the birth of this lotus that has all the planetary systems. Then one has to move ahead and meditate on the nipples of the Lord, which are like beautiful pearls. They are whitened by the pearl necklace that is there on the Lord's neck.
Dhyaye dvayam vrishadahara mayukha gauram.
Next comes meditation on the chest of the Lord.
Vakshodhivasam rishabhasya mahavibhute pumsam manonayana nirvritam adadhanam kantham cha kaustubhamaner adibhushanartham kuryanmanasya khilaloka namaskritasya.
This shloka describes meditation on the chest and the neck of the Lord. Here Kapiladeva says,
Vakshodhivasam rishabhasya mahavibhutehe. Mahavibhuti refers to Mahalakshmi. That Vakshasthala or the chest of the Lord is the residence place of Mahalakshmi. Vakshodhi vasam rishabhasya mahavibhutehe pumsam mano nayana nivrutam adadhanam. By meditating on the chest of the Lord, our minds and our hearts and our eyes are completely satisfied. Then kantam cha kaustubhamaner abhibhushanartham. And the Lord's kantha, neck, is beautifully decorated with kaustubhamani. One has to meditate on that beautiful neck of the Lord. And kaustubhamani also. Meditation on neck is incomplete without meditating on the kaustubhamani. And kuryan manasya khilaloka namaskritasya. One has to meditate on the Lord and offer obeisances to the Lord, because the Lord is worshipped by all the people in all the planetary systems. So this is description of Krishna's chest and neck. 27th shloka. Very beautiful shloka. Bahumscha mandara girehi parivartanena nirnikta bahuvalayan adhiloka palan sanchintaye dashashatara masahyate jaha shankham cha tatkara saroruharaja hamsam. Bahumscha mandara girehi parivartanena. Next meditation is on the meditation on the arms of the Lord. We have to meditate on the hands also. We have progressively come from the lotus feet to the hands of the Lord. Bahumscha mandara girehi parivartanena. The Lord's arms are decorated with beautiful armlets and then bracelets. So very beautiful ornaments. It is said that during Samudra Manthan, during the churning of milk ocean by the demigods and demons, the Lord expanded himself as Kurmadev and held the mountain, Mandara mountain, from bottom. So when Mandara mountain was rotating on the back of this Kurma avatar, Lord Kurma, it is said that this rubbing of the mountain polished the ornaments of the Lord. So one has to meditate on the arms and ornaments of the Lord that are polished during Samudra Manthan. Bahumscha mandara girehi parivartanena nirnikta bahu valayan adhiloka palan. And these beautiful arms of the Lord, strong arms of the Lord, are the sources of the strength of all lokapalas, of all demigods. All the demigods and kshatriyas derive their strength from the arms of the Lord. Sanchintaye dashashataram asahyatejaha shankham chatatkarasaroruharaja hamsam. And the Lord also holds shankha and chakra in his arms. So our meditation on the arms of the Lord are not complete without meditating on shankha and chakra. Chakra is dazzling. Chakra, ayudha, the Lord releases to cut the throat of demoniac people. And the Lord also is holding this beautiful conch shell. Karasaroruha rajahamsam. So the kara means the hand of the Lord is like saroruha, is like lotus. And the shankha is like rajahamsa, a regal swan. So when the Lord is holding conch shell in his hand, it appears that a regal swan is playing in the midst of lotus stems. That is the beautiful comparison given about the shankha that is in the hands of the Lord. Next shloka. This is about gada of the Lord. The Lord has four arms, right? So this is meditation on the gada of the Lord. We have discussed about shankha. Now gada is remaining.
Kaumodaki bhagavato dayitam smareta digdhamarati bhatashonita kardamena mala madhuvrata varuthagiro apaghushtam chaityasya tattvamamalam manimasya kanthe.
In this beautiful shloka, we have to meditate on the gada of the Lord, Kaumodaki.
Kaumodaki bhagavato dayitam smareta.
The name of Lord's gada or mace is called Kaumodaki. And we have to meditate on that Kaumodaki gada. And this Kaumodaki gada is constantly tainted with the blood of the demons. Bhagavato dayitam smareta. It is very dear to the Lord. And digdham arati bhatashonita kardamena. Digdham. So this Kaumodaki gada is employed by the Lord to always punish the demons, because that's why it is tainted with the blood of the demons. So the Lord uses his chakra and gada to punish the demoniac people, and he uses his lotus and
Padma and conch shell, Shankha, to bless the devotees. So two hands are meant to bless the devotees, two hands are meant to punish the demons. And there are two kinds of living entities in this shloka mentioned, Arati and Amala. Arati means demoniac people who are averse to a sense of subordination to Krishna. They are not actually devotees of the Lord. And Arati, then Amala, means pure devotees. And the Lord wears a beautiful pearl necklace. That is Malam Madhuvrata Varutha Ghiropa Gushtam. The Lord wears a beautiful pearl necklace that is represented by pure devotees of the Lord. While the gada in the hand of the Lord is meant to punish the demons, the pearl necklace in the neck of the Lord that represents devotees of the Lord. This is the importance that the Lord gives to the devotees. He holds them close to the heart, like that. So, chaityasya tattva mamalam manimasya kanthe. Next, we come to the lotus face of the Lord. And next meditation in the lotus face, that is 29th sloka. Bhrityanu kampita dhiyeha grihita murtehe sanchintayet bhagavato vadanara vindam yadvispuranmaka rakundala valgitena vidyoti tamalakapola mudara nasam. In this shloka, the Lord's face is described and also His compassion is described. Bhrityanu kampita dhiyeha grihita murtehe. Out of His anukampa, out of His benevolence and compassion and mercy on His devotees, the Lord accepts so many incarnations and descends into this world. Bhrutya anukampita dhiyeha grihita murtehe sanchintayet bhagavato vadanaravindam. Let us meditate on that beautiful, compassionate face of the Lord. And other descriptions are also there about the face. Makara kundala valgitena, the face is also shining with this makara kundala, alligator shaped earrings. Of all the ornaments of the Lord, the earrings of the Lord are especially striking and fortunate, because when the Lord is walking, especially in Vrindavan, as Krishna is running, this makara kundal they get an opportunity to constantly kiss the cheeks of the Lord. That's why they are very special ornaments of the Lord. Next, the Lord also has beautiful forehead and beautiful nose. All these are described. Then, a further description of the lotus face of the Lord. Yat Shri Niketama Libihi Parisevyamanam Bhutyasvaya Kutilakuntala Vrinda Jushtam Meenadvayashraya Madhikshipadabjanetram Dhyayen Manomayamatandrita Ullasadbhru. Yat Shri Niketa Malibihi Parisevyamanam. And the lotus face of the Lord is further described, that the beautiful face of the Lord is framed with curly locks of hair, which are very blackish. That bluish face is framed with blackish hairs, and it's looking so resplendent. And Meena Dvayashraya Madhikshipadab Janetram. And the lotus face of the Lord is compared to a beautiful scene. You take a pot with water, and inside that water there is lotus. And next to that lotus there are two fish, which are very restlessly moving. So the Lord's lotus face is compared like this. So the fish are compared to the Lord's expressive eyes. So the whole face is bluish in color. So like water. So, the scene of the lotus encircled by the lotus, which is surrounded by two beautiful fish in a water reservoir, is put to shame. It's not so attractive as the face of the Lord. The face of the Lord is more attractive than this. So, next shloka. We'll conclude in few minutes. Next is about the eyes and glance of the Lord. Tasyava lokamadhikam kripayati ghoram. Tapatrayopashamanaya nisrishtamakshnoham snigdhasmitanugunitam vipulaprasadam dhyayechiram vipulabhavanaya guhayam. Tasyava lokamadhika krupayati ghora tapatrayopashamanaya nisrishtamakshnoham means the beautiful loving, affectionate, compassionate, merciful, benevolent glances of the Lord will completely vanquish our tapatrayas, the threefold miseries of material existence. So we have to expose ourselves to the glances of the Lord while we are taking darshan. It's not that we are seeing the Lord. The Lord is also seeing us. He is a person standing there when we are taking darshan of Krishna. Snigdhasmitanu gunitam vipula prasadam. Snigdhasmita. His smile is so affectionate. Vipula prasadam. Prasada means mercy. Vipula prasadam means abundant mercy. The Lord will profusely bestow His mercy through His beautiful smiles and glances. And we, while taking darshan of Krishna's beautiful face, then we are exposing ourselves to those affectionate glances coming upon us. That purifies our hearts, that satisfies our mind, that brings us closer to Him. So, dhyaya chiram vipula bhavanaya guhayam. With deep emotions and love and affection, we have to meditate on the beautiful face of the Lord for a long time. Then we come to the smile of the Lord. We are within the face only. Sometimes we meditate on the eyes, sometimes on the eyebrows, sometimes on the face and smile and nose and ears and curly locks and all that. So we are meditating on the smile now and also eyebrows. Hasam hare ravanata khila loka tivra shokashru sagara visoshana matyudaram sammohanaya rachitam nijamaya yasya bhrumandalam nikrite makaradhvajasya hasam harer avanata akhila loka tivra shoka ashru sagara visoshana matyudaram. The beautiful smile of the Lord will completely vanquish the tears that emanate from our eyes. So the conditioned soul has created an ocean of lamentation by shedding tears while experiencing the threefold miseries of material existence. So that ocean of tears, ocean of lamentation can be dried up within a moment when we see the smile of the Lord. And also the eyebrows of the Lord are very expressive. And when we focus on the eyebrows of the Lord, which are like bows, and the Lord affectionately shows His glances, which are like arrows. So from these bows, arrows of His glances will come. And these glances, which are thrown from the bows of Krishna's eyebrows, expressive eyebrows, will destroy the effect of the arrows which are thrown upon us by Cupid. So we can be protected from these charms of a sex god, of this Cupid, of this Madana, when we see the eyebrows of the Lord. So the yogi, one of the main obstacles that a yogi could face in one's spiritual practices is that one is attracted by the sex impulse. One is attracted by opposite gender. So one can protect oneself from that allurements and lusty distractions by meditating on the eyebrows of the Lord. Bhrumandalam manikriti makaradhajasya. Then finally, dhyanayanam prahisitam bahuladharoshta bhasarunayuta tanudvijakunda panktiyem dhyayet svadeha kuhare vasitasya vishnor bhaktyardra yarpitamana napruthakdi drikshet. So dhyanayanam prahasitam bahuladharoshta. So one has to also meditate on the laughter of the Lord, and by that one can derive a lot of mercy and happiness and satisfaction at heart. So a yogi, an Ashtanga yogi, we have been discussing about the meditation of an Ashtanga yogi, but this meditation and this whole description of Krishna's form and the effects of the darshan of various limbs of Krishna are very much relevant for bhakti yogis also. And a Ashtanga yogi would meditate on this beautiful form of the Lord, and by such meditation, there is a very good possibility that this Ashtanga yogi could become a bhakti yogi. So, by performing Ashtanga yoga, he may be aiming for liberation. But by meditating on this enchanting form of the Lord, personal form of the Lord, he can develop love and devotion
for that beautiful form of the Lord, and he can become a bhakti yogi. But an unfortunate yogi will withdraw his mind from this beautiful form of the Lord and thinks that I have to go to the next stage of samadhi and attain liberation. That is his misfortune. But a fortunate yogi will get attracted to this beautiful form of the Lord and he could become a devotee of the Lord. So thus, Kapiladev completes his description of this Ashtanga Yoga. So today we discussed four topics. Mother Devahuti asked four questions and Kapiladev answered these four questions. First question, dispelling the ignorance or illusion of Mahamamiti conception. The answer is that one has to perform Adhyatmika Yoga that has Sankhya, Ashtanga Yoga and Bhakti Yoga as elements. Of these three, Bhakti is the topmost. And second question of Devahuti is, what is the kind of Bhakti that I have to perform to easily attain you? Then Kapiladev says, you have to perform Bhava Bhakti, means devotional service with emotions. But if one does not have those emotions, one can practice devotional service by doing Vaidhi Bhakti. Then third question is about Jnana or Sankhya Yoga. So in Sankhya, Kapila enumerated various material elements and analyzed their characteristics. And fourth is Ashtanga Yoga. Kapiladev elaborately described the limbs of Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana and Samadhi. So this completes the portions of Asankhya and Yoga or Ashtanga Yoga. Tomorrow we will discuss the other topics. Thank you all very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.